Good morning. It's been a long time since we've seen some of you. Last week was a low week. We did have church, and we had a good time with just a few of us. And so, since there were only a few of us, what I did was I pushed back much of what I was going to say to this week, so you didn't miss anything. Isn't that great? But what I did talk about, has to do with what we are talking about this morning and in the coming weeks. We're doing a series on worldviews, how we look at the world around us and how other people look at the world around us, and what happens when those worldviews, the way we look at the world, the way we look at life, what happens when those things clash with each other and with a biblical worldview. And this coming year, we're going to be looking at, throughout the year, we're going to be looking at the year again. Every year, we do things again and again. And last week, I talked about the power of God. And I want to read from Romans chapter 1, verse 16 through 17. Paul writes, "I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. First for the Jew, then for the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." Last week we talked about the power of God, and that power is at work in us and through us. And so this year, that's what we're going to be looking at. The power of God to redeem us, the power of God to renew us, and the power of God to release us. And we're going to be doing that. It won't all be completely obvious, but the purpose of that is because we kind of get used to these things. We get used to talking about the same things over and over again. We get used to just doing the same thing the next year. Like, how many of you every year will, for 2 months or 3 months, write last year's year whenever you write the date? Yeah, no one else? I do that. You know, it'll be April, and I'll write the previous year in. Every year, I know that's going to happen. And every year, we talk about new things. And every year, you go through our stores, and every year you can count. You know, you can count the calendar by what they are putting up on the display racks. You know, and if you're like me, you go in and you're always surprised that they're already putting up the next holiday's stuff. You know, Valentine's Day is already, that stuff's already been put up. And so, we do this with our faith as well. And we need not just God's power at work in us, we need to have our minds renewed and our minds right. And so we're going to be looking at all these things so that we can be in a right place with God and a right place in how we look at what He's called us to. So this morning, we're part of a series called Inconceivable. It's a collision of worldviews, and I just sometimes like to do stupid stuff because I think it's funny, and I only need to make myself laugh. So that's from The Princess Bride. If you've ever seen the movie The Princess Bride, great movie, Inconceivable. You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. That's the quote from that movie. If you haven't seen it, watch the movie. Well, this February, I believe on February 4th, I don't know if you've heard the news, but Ken Ham is going to do a debate with Bill Nye the Science Guy. And if you're not familiar with Bill Nye the Science Guy, he did a TV show on for kids many years ago, and he's kind of come back up as my generation has gotten to the 30s. He's kind of come back in the spotlight because you know, we all loved him, and kind of, you know, he's popular again. And I think schools still show him because, of course, my generation, they're all teachers now. So, like, all the teachers show Bill Nye the Science Guy. And he presents science in a humorous way and often a fun way. And he teaches these things to a target audience of young kids, which is why I still like to watch him. But he's going to be debating Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Are you familiar with the Creation Museum in northern Kentucky, just outside of Cincinnati? Ken Ham is the kind of the founder of that and president. I don't know what he's oversees that. So he invited Bill, or challenged and invited Bill Nye to come in, and they're going to do a debate on creation, and it's been all over the news. The tickets for this sold out in 2 minutes online, and they were going to webcast it, but it's so popular that it's actually they're trying to find new ways of kind of to get that out there, because they don't think their webcast will be able to handle the traffic. So they may try and televise it. Who knows how that's going to play out. It's a debate on creation and evolution. It's a debate on whether or not creation is a viable origin story, if you will, a viable answer to how did all this come to be. And the perspective of Bill Nye is that it's not, and that parents are damaging their children and damaging their future and our future by teaching them that it is, and by saying that evolution is not how this world developed. And Ken Ham's position is that creation is how this world developed. And I don't know how he's going to approach this particular debate, but in the past he's often been very, very staunch that when you read through Genesis, exactly how you read it, that's a kind of the science for how you look at the creation of the world. And so there's within this spectrum, there's people who believe all sorts of things from one end to the other. And you have different ways of looking at not just how the world is created, but I appreciate that this is happening right now, because this is kind of a reflection of how people look at not the way the world was created, but how people look at their world, how people look at themselves, how people look at how did mankind come into be and why, and the bigger questions that, you know, the philosophy questions that even if you're not a philosopher, you still think about those things. People think about these things. They think about pain, they think about suffering, they ask questions of why, they ask questions of what is my purpose, what meaning does my life have. All of these questions have to do with worldview, and this debate between creation and evolution is just a reflection of people who come from different worldviews and what happens when those worldviews collide. What happens when the way you look at the world around you collides with the way that someone else looks at the world around, the way that other people look at the world around them. And over the next few weeks, we're actually going to be taking this idea of how we look at the world and trying to understand and trying to look at what does this mean for our faith? What does this mean for us as Christians and how we live and how do we interact with the world around us? This morning, we're going to continue in Romans chapter 1, verse 18. And I'll just go ahead and read it. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. I want to stop there, and we'll continue on in this series in the coming passage. But Paul, as he's writing, how many of you have heard this passage before, read this passage before? Let me know. Yeah. Okay, most of you. It's kind of a familiar passage for some of us because this introduces, well, this passage deals with a lot of hot topics that our culture is dealing with right now. It deals with certain views and about and sins that our culture struggles with, and there's battles that rage over these teachings. But I want you to set aside those things for now. It doesn't mean you ignore them, but I want you to set aside those other ideas and thoughts that are expressed in this passage and that kind of come at you from our world. And I want you to focus on just one thing right now. And that one thing is this. What we believe shapes how we live. You've heard me say that before. But oftentimes, how we want to live will shape what we believe. It's not always, okay, I choose to believe this, so I'm going to, and then I live it out this way. This is why this is so difficult, because oftentimes it's, I want to live this way, and so this is what I believe. How we want to live shapes what we believe. And this is what Paul says here. He says, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. In other words, I'm going to choose to say that this is wrong, this good thing that's from God is wrong, because I want to live this way. We don't say this, but from our perspective, from reading Bible, I want to sin. Nobody ever says that. But it's, I want to sin, and so I'm going to choose not to believe these things and believe these other things so I can live the way I want to live. Since the creation... Verse 20, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. So all of us, all people, have some idea about the character of God. Doesn't mean we know everything there is to know about God, otherwise we wouldn't need this revelation that we have. Otherwise we wouldn't need Jesus to reveal the Father to us. Doesn't mean we know everything about God, but we understand his character. He has implanted that within us, and he's shown that through his creation, through the world around us, and through in and through us. And because of that, there's this truth that God has expressed in his creation about who he is. But we ignore that because we want to believe something else. So I want to talk about an idea now that it has different connotations depending on who you're talking with, but it's the idea of myth. Okay, not MythBusters, where you know this common cultural view that's held. I'm talking about myth as in story, narrative. Oftentimes, we as Christians will look at Greek mythology. We'll look at Greek mythology, and we'll that's what we think of when we think of this kind of myth. But there are other myths and other mythologies. And the concept isn't, by saying it's myth, what we often mean is that it's not true. But myth has been defined as the way you think about the world in a narrative, in a story form. Okay? So myth isn't just about things that aren't true. It's about the way you think about the world in a story form. So for instance, if you, as a Greek or Roman, if you wanted to, have sex whenever you wanted, with whomever you wanted, if you wanted to, steal from those who are weaker. If you want to, there's all sorts of different things that we could pull out from this. If you wanted to do those things, then the Greek mythology would fit well for you because you have these gods, these people, or well, these beings, who justify how you want to live. They make it right. So, I'm not talking about current Greek people, by the way. I'm talking about ancient Greeks. So if you're an ancient Greek and that's how you want to live, then you are justified in living that way because your God, they live that way. We can read through all of the beginning and origin and mythologies of other cultures and see how the gods have acted. And what we see then is that justifies, that makes right how people can act towards each other and in their own lives. And then we have the story of creation, and we have God's story and how he has acted in the world. And there's something different about it. It's similar to other stories of other cultures. It is. It's kind of shocking to Christians when they're confronted with ideas that the Egyptian and Babylonian and other cultures in the area, that their teachings and their stories, that there are elements that are very similar to the Old Testament account. Similar to the creation account, similar to God saving Israel out of Egypt. There's all sorts of similarities to these other cultures, but there's always major differences. And the major difference is that God is different from these other gods. For our purposes, God is different in that he doesn't allow us to live the way we want to live by justifying our behavior. He sets the standard for our behavior, and it's always better, it's always different than what the rest of the world says, than what those other cultures say, and often than what we say. Because even as Christians, we do this, and we'll talk about this more next week, but even as Christians, we do this. We believe that Jesus is God's Son and that he died for us on the cross, that we believe that he is the, that they are one God, and that God has sent his Spirit to live in us, and that we can have redemption through him, that we can be saved through Jesus Christ. But we believe these things and we say these things, but even we have certain ways we want to live. And so we choose what we believe based on how we want to live. We all do this. We all have different outlooks on the world around us. We all have come to where we are at from different experiences, different people who have taught us, different influences in our lives. And we've all come to the same place. And we as Christians have one thing that separates us from, not from the world, that separates us from how we think about the world around us. And that is that we don't get to determine our mythology. Remember, I'm not talking about that in the sense of it's not true. Talking about that in the sense of what we believe, the story about what we believe, the story that shapes how we act, what we believe is right. We don't get to shape that. That story was made for us. That's the story of Scripture. It is history. It is real. It is true. But it is a narrative. A narrative, a story that helps us understand God's character and helps us understand how God's character plays out in this world and what part we have in that. So when we look at our narrative and when the world looks at their narrative, their story, and we come together and those stories are different, for instance, creation and evolution, those are different stories for how we got to where we are.
When those worlds come together, when those ways of looking at the world come together, it doesn't fit. You have a clash. You get things like Ken Ham's, it started a while ago. Bill Nye posted a video online decrying creationism and those who are teaching that. And Ken Ham posted some responses, and there was a big debate. This was quite some time ago, and then now it's coming back. And it's going to be, there's going to be a media storm around it, and there's going to be a frenzy around it. And there's going to be people who are interested in it. There's going to be people who hate it. There's going to be people who struggle with it. But what it is what it's going to be is not a changing of the story, of helping those who have a different story understand God's story. It's going to be a fight, a battle, a clash. Even if they're civil with each other. And the reason it's going to be a battle and a clash is because when people create their mythology out of how they want to live, when they create the story because they want to live their way, they're not going to give that up because they want to continue to live the way they want to live. The root problem has been the same since the beginning, which is funny because that's actually the beginning of our story. Well, near the beginning of our story. The beginning of our story is that God created everything. And then the root problem came in. Then sin entered in. But it's not just any sin, one sin. That one sin was that we could be like God. That we could create our own story. That we could have control over what's okay for us and what's right. That we could be the ones that determine our own destinies. I'm not talking about predestination. I just mean, I want to do this, so I'm going to do this. We call that selfishness, self-centeredness, pride. All of those things are a part of this root problem, and this root problem has existed since the beginning of our story. And it exists today. And the way we deal with this isn't by taking those worldviews and trying to force the other mythology to fit our mythology. We have to deal with the problem. I tried to find it. I spent a long time trying to find this. There's a poster. I don't know if any of you will remember this. I saw it in the 80s and 90s as a poster about creation versus evolution. And this on one side is this kind of tower on an island, and that was evolution. On the other side is a tower and an island, and that's creation. And they have it's like castles, and they have cannons, and they're shooting cannons at each other. Any of you ever seen this poster? No? Okay. I really looked for a picture of this. And the poster was that the evolutionists were shooting cannons at the foundation of the creation castle. And the creation castle was just shooting cannons kind of sporadically. The idea being that evolution is attacking our foundation and creation isn't attacking the other foundation. And the poster was right in a sense that it is about basic beliefs. It is about basic beliefs. But the poster is completely wrong in the sense that we don't need to attack anything. That's not why we're here. That's not what our story is. Our story, the one we have in Scripture, the example that is set for us by Jesus Christ, isn't that we have to attack worldly philosophies. Because if we do that, we're going to be spinning our wheels trying to mash up this the story that we have, and we're going to try and we're going to clash against the story that other people have. That's not who God is. That's not his character. That's not what he has asked us to be for him. Let me read Romans chapter 1, verse 18 again and following. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. What do we call that, by the way? What? Idolatry. Idolatry. Those are idols. That's idolatry. And even though you and I aren't taking our wood furniture or just wood and carving it into idols, maybe, I hope not, and I hope we're not taking metal and forming idols out of that, you know, we may not be doing that. The process that gets us to that point is the same, and that is that we give up what God has taught, what God shows of himself, for how we want to live. That's idolatry. The physical symbols of that idolatry are just the end result of us choosing to believe what we want to believe based on how we want to live. Verse 24, therefore God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than the Creator who is forever praised. Amen. Because of this, you can keep reading. I'm going to stop reading right there. God has allowed mankind, to continue on in their depravity, to continue on in those sins. And that's part of how God's wrath has been revealed, is that he's, as like foolish children, he's let us suffer the consequences of our own choices. That's part of it. And there's all sorts of results that come from that. You can see that at the end of chapter 1. You can read that later. And I want to go back to chapter 1, verse 16. Paul writes, I am not ashamed of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, the good news of the kingdom of God. I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. We do not fight our neighbors. We don't fight the world. What we do is we let God's power transform hearts and minds. I believe firmly that how we look at the world around us matters. And it matters for us as Christians. We need to understand this. We need to understand how we look at the world. We need to understand God's character. But what doesn't matter is if someone trades in one false view, one erroneous story for another erroneous story. It doesn't matter if someone trades in their views of the world around them, if those views are wrong and they're trading them for other views that are wrong. It doesn't matter. You're getting out of one sinking boat and into another sinking boat. Or like there's all sorts of classic cartoons and movies where, you know, someone's bailing water out of the boat and they're just splashing the person in the face behind them. That's what that's like. The only thing that does matter is that when God transforms us in and through Jesus Christ, which is why we have crosses everywhere, which is why we preach Jesus Christ, which is why we talk about how important it is to celebrate Christ's death through communion and to proclaim it, which is why we talk about how important it is to talk to others about it, because it's through that good news of the kingdom of God through Jesus Christ that lives are transformed, that minds are transformed, so that all of us can have the way we will look at the world corrected by God's truth. So that we aren't going around carving out gods. So that we aren't living our lives making our own gods. Because that's the temptation, and that's the struggle that our neighbors are facing. Our world is a world filled with idolatry, and the answer to idolatry is the good news of Jesus Christ. I want to encourage you. I'm going to give you homework. I don't care if you think of it that way. Okay, if that's like you. Okay, I'm going to give you something to do. How's that? Something to do. Isaiah chapter 44. Now, if you have something to write with and want to write in your bulletin, Isaiah 44, verses 6 through 23. Isaiah 44, 6 through... Don't write on your arm. Isaiah 44, 6 through 23. Read that passage and read through it and read it a few times. And go back and read Romans chapter 1. And just let those passages sink in your mind. And you might pick up and focus on different words and different parts of those passages. But read through Isaiah 44 and let that passage work in your mind. Because the way that we look at the world as Christians, it doesn't matter just for us. The way we look at the world as Christians matters for the people around us. This morning in Sunday school, we were reading through James. And James 3, verse 1 says, "Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly." And yet, we're called to lives of discipleship. That means that we learn how to live from Jesus Christ, and we learn how to live from those who are more mature in Jesus Christ. It also means that we help disciple others. And so what we believe about the world around us, about who God is and how He's shaped our world, it matters for the people that are Christians, that are disciples, because we help shape their lives. We need to be careful about that. And it matters because of the people who are lost to their own idolatry, who are worshiping their own gods. Gods that they've created, gods that other people have created. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who made them. It doesn't matter what led up to that point, the point that they're living right now. What matters is that Jesus Christ is going to be the one who can free them from that. Jesus Christ is the one who can transform their minds and their lives. And it matters that we understand how God acts in this world, and we understand His character because He does that through us. This is probably one of the most damaging misunderstandings that we as Christians have. That is that we think God does it all in the background, and that's not true. He does it all in the foreground. We just can't see it. He does it all working through us. We know that because we had a thank you letter that Tom read from Shirley this morning. Shirley looked back and She looked back at the influence. And what it is looking back at the people who are acting and working. And God is doing it. God is the one. It's His power at work, but it's His power at work in and through His people. In and through you. So my question for you this morning, because it matters what we believe and how we look at the world around us and how we understand God's character, because that matters, my question for you is, do you have any idols in your life? Do you have anything in your life? This is always the hard thing, to look at ourselves. It's easier to look at other people. Do you have anything in your life? You're living that way because that's the way you want to live. And it's shaping what you believe. We're going to stand and we're going to sing an invitation hymn. Song. And it's the one that they opened with this morning, I Give You My Heart. In order for us to do that, we need to give up. In order for us to give God our hearts, we need to give up. Really, the way we want to live. I've got over here, I keep pointing right here on the floor. I've got this picture of that's the way I want to live. We've got a leaky roof. I don't know if you guys know this. We can't get the roofing company to get back with us. So hopefully we'll get it fixed sometime. So we have a leaky roof. And, you know, generally we're dry. Generally we're okay. But that leaky roof, it's causing some damage. It's taking a while. It's just little bits here and there. And I've got this picture of this leaky roof. And as Christians, it's not that we aren't saved. It's not that God isn't working in our lives. It's that we're comfortable with this leaky roof and we don't know the damage that it's doing long term. And it's leaking because that's the way we want to live. We don't want to fix it. We don't want to let God fix it because it's going to cost too much. It's going to cost us our freedom to do that thing. The great irony is that freedom is only found in Jesus Christ. Let's stand and let's sing, I Give You My Heart.